Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Thanks again for joining us, folks, here on Circles of Change, our final segment of the day. We've called Conrad Smith in Seattle. Conrad, how are you this morning?
Very well. How are you?
We're just terrific. We're on a roll. We've talked about change, globalization, adapting, etc. And I know your topic, the courage to lead, a lens for improved leadership, is going to fit in just great. So thanks again for joining us.
Well, thank you.
You bet. Let me give you a brief introduction to our listeners. Conrad Smith, he leads the Impact Group. It was established in 1996, based in Seattle, backed by his 35 years of military and business leadership experience in the U.S. Navy, General Electric, James River, and as a private business owner. Fanatical about financial results, continuous change, respect, openness, and accountability, Conrad helps business leaders from many industries across North America to be maximally effective in the achievement of their strategies. Originally from Norfolk, Virginia, and a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy and Webster College, Conrad is married with three children and is an avid runner in terms of just completing last month his 25th marathon while being the top fundraiser for the American Cancer Society's Team Determination. In addition to being on the board of two private companies in the Pacific Northwest, Conrad is an engaging speaker at forums as diverse as manufacturing employees to foreign diplomats. The topic of courage, Comrade, yourself having served our country, was that just a logical extension of your own studies and practice in the area of leadership?
Well, not really. What I find most of the time when I'm working with business leaders that are, I'd say, stuck in their ability to move their process forward is an inability to look seriously at what's keeping them from moving ahead. And the biggest barrier tends to lead off on what Tim was talking about in your last segment. It's an inability to move past those failures and look seriously at themselves as part of the problem that's causing the organization to be stuck in the first place.
You betcha. And in fact, that's where that phrase leadership development is such a critical possibility for organizations. But it takes oftentimes leaders, you know, to take a big leap away from that ego that's guided them to think they've got it all right, to say, okay, I need to reopen some of the doors here.
Yeah, and a lot of this comes down to essentially not liking to hear or not wanting to hear. A word that a lot of people tend to not want to use is being afraid, essentially, to hear what the truth is.
Yeah.
And when it comes down to communication and organizations that are working well, there needs to be, starting with the leadership down, an ability for that organization to actually communicate in a very open and honest way. Honesty and truth are a couple of words that can get organizations and individuals spinning out a little bit, because there's a wide variation of definitions of what the truth or what is being honest really all about.
Exactly. Or, you know, and whether that be the honesty in the schedule that you developed for the project, or honesty in the feedback that you give someone as to how they're meeting their goals.
So Tim just mentioned, for example, his concept of latent errors in his segment.
Right.
When that elephant is in the room, and if you don't know about the latent error, that's a level of unconscious operation, but if you actually have some knowledge of that, and the organization or the leader is unwilling to actually hear that information, whether it's from the whistleblower coming forward or actually just someone engaged in the organization who's not taking it from a standpoint that they have to blow the whistle, they just want to engage and surface something that has been seen.
Precisely.
We almost fall back to that fairy tale level of discussion of the emperor has no clothes, when people in the organization can see what the leader is not able to see, that calls into question whether leaders are courageous enough sometimes to actually take a strong look at not only themselves but the organization.
You know, I would venture to say, and I'm certain you get this every time you work with your clients just like I do, Conrad, you know, people feel they have the idea of what a good leader is. But, you know, what is the problem then with simply following that which they have known, even maybe in their own skin has worked well, and excuse that pun, of past leaders?
Well, a biographical approach to leadership assumes that leadership is a linear function.
And I
know, Zara, you've got a pretty strong engineering background. I do as well. And from a system standpoint, a linear function is very easy to understand. So I think what most people fall in the problem of is it's simple, it's easy to diagram on a board, and there is a thought process that if I study what past leaders have done, and I look at their attributes, I look at their characteristics, I even look at maybe some of the circumstances that they had to lead in, and then I apply those types of characteristics, behaviors to my situations, I'll get similar outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
But linear functions are too simplistic. And again, as Tim just spent a half hour talking about the complexity of what drives not only the circumstances that he was exploring in his book, most organizations, and when particularly the human systems within those organizations, are incredibly complex. So you don't have a linear system. You have a very complex, multidimensional system.
That is often unstable.
And
right.
I would argue, actually, that there is, in every organization, a level of homeostasis.
Okay, good point, good point.
That keeps that organization stuck in that level of functioning, which facilitates leaders not to be necessarily as courageous as they need to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, short of becoming a junior psychologist in all this, it really comes down to once that system starts to function properly at a level of homeostasis, people get comfortable. And sometimes that leader gets comfortable. And there are times when that comfort manifests itself as, I don't want to know what I don't know.
Exactly.
And I don't want to hear anything that I don't want to hear.
Also that can get reinforced by how they're recognized and rewarded, so why would they want to change?
Particularly if that reward is not a positive reward.
Mm-hmm.
And the complexity starts to become multidimensional when we start to explore the level of what is truth. Somewhere between my perception and my understanding of reality is my understanding of what is truly going on.
Exactly,
and that's hard enough to come to grips with for an individual, but when that organization gets to be 100 people, 1,000 people, or 10,000 people, the complexity is very difficult.
Indeed. Conrad, again, this opening segment, we talked about courage to lead. You know, many people associate courage with that which it takes to pull off heroic efforts. But if you equate the word of courage to truth, this is something that applies in any set of circumstances, correct?
It really does. And I think most time, from a business leadership perspective, we tend to promote the idea with leaders that the ones of us who are helping leaders be better at what they do, there is a common direction that says when the going gets tough, the tough get going, and we need to step up to those big challenges. And the reality, running a business particularly, has those opportunities occur on a daily basis. To quote a good friend of mine, management is a full contact sport.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And you don't get a day off, and you don't get an opportunity to not address what needs to be addressed on a day-to-day basis. And it could be easy for listeners to hear this addressing what needs to be addressed as a negative type consequence, and that's not really the case at all. I think what ends up happening most of the time is that most leaders' attention gets focused on the outliers, whether it's an outlier person, an outlier business system, whatever is not within an expectation gets the attention. And generally, that means about 80%+ of the organization, whether it's human systems or mechanical systems or financial systems, don't get any attention at all.
Exactly. And they're on autopilot. Now, I think we should be careful to not think that, you know, that comment management is a full contact sport. That doesn't mean necessarily always in action, because sometimes the best leadership act is for the leader to step back and let things unfurl in a certain pace, correct?
That's true, and that requires the same level of
courage and honesty, yeah,
to be able to see my reactions. If I am not comfortable with the interpersonal relationships of my organizations, if I don't have a good, strong sense of my own awareness, it would be very difficult for me as a leader to not react to everything that perhaps I shouldn't react to.
Mm-hmm.
And in other cases, I might overreact when I really had no intention of overreacting.
Or people interpret that what you've done as a reaction or overreaction.
Well, yeah, and that drives to another fundamental point that I make a lot of times, and that a lot of leaders will explain away to me that it wasn't my intention.
Right, exactly.
That was not my intention. I was misinterpreted. In other words, that's not my fault. And, you know, as a leader, you only get to the benefit of your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
People see your behavior. They don't get to see your intention. So if you're not aware of what your behavior is because of your unwillingness to really look at what's driving your behavior, there will definitely be a disconnect between whatever your intention is and your outlying behavior.
Right on. Conrad, can you give us an example, perhaps, you know, without mentioning names or so inclined, a client you've worked with or a team you've worked with where some of these principles, you've helped them reshift, you know, shift what they're thinking, seeing their awareness to end up with the kind of results that you are pleased to see them get to?
The biggest example I have, and this happens not just at one organization but at several, is that when an organization is led by either a team or an individual, and it is not uncommon that a management team adopts this a level of we know what's best for the business,
mm-hmm, yeah,
we know what's best for this organization, and we're running it for full force ahead. And the constraint is that the organization isn't getting the results that they want. And their perception is, well, we'll have to change all the people because we know what we're doing. These people aren't stepping up to the game.
Yeah.
That's sometimes very fascinating when that organization flourished before either the individual or the group of individuals even showed up. And the challenge there is to get the team or the individual to recognize that the team only does what the leaders drive it toward doing.
Exactly.
So opening up a channel of communication is the essential first step. A lot of folks that I know align very strongly to like a 360 feedback process. That's the first direction that they head when they want to get feedback. I'm not a big proponent of 360 feedback. I think there's a contradiction in a fundamental aspect of wanting to get feedback and the conversation of being courageous enough to get feedback.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, the other challenge, of course, with 360s is depending upon who you invite to be part of the process, you can already stage up what the likely convergence of the answers will be.
Well, you've got that dilemma, plus you've got the dilemma of, you know, people not being willing to give you feedback to your face is a pretty significant,
yeah,
indicator that your organization isn't doing what your organization,
mm-hmm,
needs to do anyway, and you're not open to that feedback. So the biggest change to your question is getting people, first that leader, and then the organization, to a point where the leader can actually hear feedback coming,
mm-hmm,
from someone. So that when, you know, those latent errors are identified, as Tim said, and they are surfaced and brought, the messenger isn't shot. So when the whistleblower has something to say, we don't take his whistle away and try to find a cubicle to stick them in.
Right, or the innovator comes up with that real, wow, that's a provocative idea, and we don't just stuff him off in a closet or cut his funding so he can't work on it.
Right. Wasn't my idea, so we shut it away. Some people are able to make that kind of shift. There are as many people who are not, and I use this word, courageous very purposefully, they're not courageous enough to step back and see what they're doing to contribute to this conversation, to this breakdown in conversation.
Mm-hmm. Conrad, you've had the opportunity to work with a variety of industries over the years, as well as, I'm certain, variety of levels within organizations, and that might even connote differences in generations of individuals. What kind of distinctions do you see? What differences have you seen over the years? Different companies, different levels in the organization, and then generations of participants in those companies.
Well, that would have been a different question 15 years ago.
I think you're right, yeah.
Our own growth. Because I'm 15 years older.
Right,
and
there you go.
That means there's 15 years worth of younger people out there working in the world. So if we take it by the demographic from an age standpoint first, there age is no barrier here. I was listening in on Tim's segment recently, and he said, you know, when people are in college, they're still open to those new ideas. I'm not finding that. I find that the ability to face your level of own awareness is across all age demographics.
I would agree.
Some will, some won't.
Yeah.
Culturally, the organizations are all affected by it. While Google has that very open culture, there are other technology companies that I work with that you would be shot if you failed something,
mm-hmm.
literally
mm-hmm.
almost.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely wouldn't have a job. And then in the other end of the business spectrum, on maybe commoditized-type businesses, I'm surprised sometimes where in those commoditized business environments, people tend to actually be more open to, you know, looking at their own levels of awareness, because coming up with innovation when you're operating on margins that are
exactly.
so razor thin,
you bet.
That's the only way they can survive.
Mm-hmm. And it's the way they have survived up to this point in time.
And the ones that aren't surviving tend to be those organizations that aren't willing to look at it any other way. I was having a conversation recently with a business owner, a very commoditized type business that, like many of those, is being encroached on by larger companies that are doing a lot of merger and acquisition
mm-hmm.
work. These owners who've had a successful business for going on four decades now just cannot get why their business is going away. They can't get why their margins are going down. Now, this is a level of numbers against an income statement and a balance sheet, you can just look at the business mechanics of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can acknowledge and be open to and courageous enough to look at those numbers. And then the phenomena that occurs is an unwillingness to courageously look at yourself and say, do I want to be right about how much this business has been in the past and why it should be there in the future? Or do I want to be in relationship with my supply chain, my customers, and my own business so that I can move this thing forward?
And even, by the way, perhaps acknowledging that you are no longer the right person in the right place to navigate the journey, whether it be by yourself or with the team you currently have in place.
Right.
So your own vulnerabilities to knowing how to change that change.
When it really comes down to it, a lot of what comes to fruition is, and why I choose this word courageous and having courage to lead, is generally there's something that's holding people back if they peel back their awareness enough that has to do with something they're afraid of. They're afraid of being exposed. They're afraid of their own competencies. They're afraid of whether they'll fit in once this mm-hmm. change is evolved and surfaced. And most of the time, they just aren't willing to even look at what that might be.
Yeah, it's sort of like a Pandora's box. And, you know, it's one of those things that might have just been storing up and other stuff layering over it over the years. And so for those clients, though, that you do work with that really have come to open up the box and address what they are afraid of, Conrad, some of the examples, is it a past bad experience they had? Is it, you know, a fundamental belief that shaped them when they were a child? What kind of things are you uncovering as you take your leaders through this developmental experience?
Well, I mean, it goes the gamut. A lot of it has to do with very early belief systems. A lot of it has to do with strong associations with their desire to show up as competent. Mm-hmm. So fears around being exposed as maybe not knowing everything, which further much sits on a belief system that says I'm supposed to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
It really does run the gamut.
And so the ability to coach and lead these leaders to a new place, part of that obviously is to accept the way that they are. But I would suspect as well you find helping them understand the power of the kind of people they surround themselves with then too.
And being open to the power that those people. For the last several decades, the idea of flatter organizations running in a team environment have been very key to how businesses and organizations move ahead. And even though that conversation's been moving forward for years, a lot of organization leaders don't go there. They still like the idea of being the person on top.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So having a strong sense and understanding of what does control mean and how can you exert the kind of control that you need to get the results without controlling people.
Right. Well, and particularly in this topic, in this day and age of people really wanting to be engaged in their work, not just satisfied, but given the opportunity to grow and excel and expand, be probably to places they didn't even realize they could get to.
Well, and yes, from the person standpoint, let's think about it from the business standpoint.
Bingo.
As a business person, you can look at your income statement and your balance sheet and on any given time see whether you're being successful or not. Now, while people aren't going to show up on your balance sheet, I'll make this stretch of an analogy. Okay? If you did consider people as a financial asset, which they're not, but if you did, then you'd have to say, well, what's the opposite side over on the equity and liability side of your balance sheet?
Yep.
Well, the equity is what you're paying as the business owner to get them in. You've made an investment to bring those people into your organization. A lot of companies, because of the way they're being led, have employees who don't buy in to the organization.
Mm-hmm.
They show up, they do what they're told to do, but they haven't invested themselves. And when you can get those employees to start investing, you get to leverage the investment that you, the owner, made, and you get some
multiples of that.
And that leverage becomes the buy-in or the debt that that employee places to the organization. And once you get that happening, now you can really take those assets and produce more with them.
Right, well placed. Well, Conrad, an excellent analogy. I appreciate your contributions today. The Courage to Lead, a Lens for Improved Leadership. For those interested in learning more about Conrad's work, it's www.impactonbiz.com in Seattle, Washington. Thanks so much for joining us, Conrad, and have a great balance of the weekend.
Thank you very much.
Real pleasure. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.